From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now, and we start this hour with the economic part of the coronavirus story. Congress is still struggling to pass a stimulus package that would send checks to most Americans and provide crucial loans for hurting businesses. But today, the Federal Reserve took major action, injecting more money into the economy in a move some economists are calling unlimited quantitative easing. For more, let's bring in Jill Schlesinger, business analyst with CBS News and host of Jill on Money. Jill, let's start with the Fed. The markets were supposed to be very bad today until that news that the Fed came out with before the markets opened this morning, saying that they're going to purchase unlimited amounts of bonds. Explain what the Fed is doing.
Well, you know that the Federal Reserve is often referred to as the lender of last resort. And here's an example of this. What certainly happened in the financial system is that there have been a lot of clogs in the system. And so we know immediately as things were getting a little bit hairy, the Fed said we're cutting rates to zero and we're buying federal treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities to keep the flow of money going. Well, then they included municipal bonds. They were going to do that as well. And this morning they said we're going to also provide some financing to investment-grade corporate securities, meaning companies who are having a really hard time being able to float their operations and get access to lending. The Fed said, yes, we will help them as well. They also mentioned that there will be some relief in terms of loan relief to small and medium companies. There weren't as many details on that, but essentially just know that this is the kitchen sink of actions from the Federal Reserve.
Okay, so that's what's going on the monetary policy side. What about the fiscal side? What is the latest from Congress, which is trying to put together its own $2 trillion stimulus package?
Well, you know, there's a few different components of it. Just think of it as sort of the large corporations, about $500 billion to those corporations. And the sticking point is really, number one, what strings come with that? We know that that obviously we don't want to be sending money to companies that give big pay increases to their executives, or they wouldn't be able to use this to buy their stock back or declare dividends. But, you know, there was a lot of unfettered authority from the Treasury about determining who receives support, and I think that there was some pushback on that. We also have the direct payments to us, to consumers, mostly to anyone who makes less than $100,000. That could also come in the form of the earned income tax credit, child tax credits, enhanced unemployment benefits. I think this is going to be incredibly important. Also, a small business facility here, somewhere around $350 billion. But again, a lot of this is predicated on what the companies have to do to get this money. A lot of small businesses are telling me, we don't have time to wait for this red tape. They've got to make this available now.
Exactly. And you've got banks like Goldman Sachs predicting the economy will contract 25% in the second quarter. J.P. Morgan saying 14%. A lot of pressure, basically, on Washington to do something and do it quickly. Jill Schlesinger, business analyst for CBS News and host of Jill on Money. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, this week it's going to get bad, so said the U.S. Surgeon General on NBC's Today Show today, and states are bracing. While New York is being called the epicenter of the U.S. outbreak with more than 200,000 confirmed cases, neighboring New Jersey has seen spillover and homegrown cases and is now among the top states in number of people infected. And over the weekend, the state's governor, Phil Murphy, ordered New Jersey's 9 million residents to stay home except for food, medicine, or medical attention, outside exercise, or to visit family or close friends. Then in a conference call with media, Murphy said he was really damned unhappy to hear people weren't following his order. So, Governor Murphy, what are you going to do? Will police pull people over or ask where they're going, break up basketball games?
Sadly, unfortunately, yes, we have to enforce this. The good news is, Robin, and I should say this, most people get it. But there are still some, and many of them are young, actually, who just see this still as an abstract threat, and they just feel like they're above it. Number one, the data shows actually they could get sick.
Right.
But more likely, they unwittingly can carry the virus and infect someone with in a more compromised demographic, an older person. So we're just saying everybody stay home, and we will use enforcement. We are using it, and we're going to be more aggressive in using it. We have no choice.
Well, what does more aggressive look like? Tickets? Jail time? I mean, what?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be some scale of penalties.
Huh.
I'm actually with the Attorney General today. Going over this very topic, and it'll be some scale. I spoke to law enforcement chiefs on Friday up and down the state to thank them, first of all, because they're putting themselves in harm's way,
mm-hmm.
but also to say we mean it as it relates to enforcement.
Governor, I got to ask you, didn't people sit up straight there in New Jersey when this terrible story came out of your state of the Fusco family? The matriarch, 73, died. Three of her adult children died. She had 11 children total, some still in intensive care, and people think that all they did was have a dinner together. I mean, didn't that make people sit up?
Yeah, it did. I mean, if you compare 2 or 3 weeks ago, we're in a different place in terms of public awareness, and part of that's due to tragedy. As of Sunday, we had 1,914 cases. We have 20 fatalities, a handful in the Fusco family, as you rightfully point out. Sadly, that certainly did all of those positives, and tragically, the fatalities have certainly gotten people's attention without question.
Yeah. What do you want the federal government to do? President Trump had another task force press conference yesterday. He had said he wouldn't use the Defense Production Act. Now, to remind people, this would authorize companies to build things that the government needs. It came out of the Korean War, has worked very effectively in the past. He has invoked it, meaning he's mentioned it, but he hasn't triggered it. Juliet Kayyem, the security analyst, said today, in her mind, it's as if he plugged in the microwave, but he hasn't turned it on yet. Now, the president said the U.S. doesn't nationalize industries, and he pointed to Venezuela, which took over industry. Now, the president's critics say that's not how this would work. Companies would be asked to make things, and the government would assure them that somebody, maybe even the government, will buy it. What would you want from the president, and what's your view of what the Defense Production Act would do?
I'll tell you what we need. We need personal protective equipment. We are way short of what we will need. We have a big ask into the federal government. They have given us some, but it was a fraction of what we asked and what we need. So that's number one. Number two, with respect to the president, we never have been and never will be Venezuela. But listen, the president's got more information before him than I have. But if I were in his shoes and I had the opportunity to activate a corporate manufacturing strategy, which would alleviate the PPE crisis that we have, that's a lever that I would pull, certainly.
Okay. And by the way, we're hearing that a lot of the medical shows that come out of Hollywood, Grey's Anatomy, for instance, which have been shut down, are sending their real things like masks and protective gear to places. I'm assuming you'd take some.
Oh, my Lord, we'd take anything we get.
Would you ever think of shutting down travel between New York and New Jersey?
Listen, I mean, I have to say that all options have to be on the table, but the travel right now has got to be essential. I mean, we've basically said to people, stay home. So the traffic across the Hudson is down dramatically. I think NJ Transit ridership is down 88 or 90%. So there's a lot less of it. But we have to leave all options on the table.
New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, thank you and best to you.
Thank you, Robin. Likewise.
Well, let's go across the country now to San Francisco, which has been under lockdown for days. Mina Kim of KQED joins us now. Mina, give us a sense of how it's going there.
Well, for the most part, people in the Bay Area have been heeding the shelter-in-place order. You can tell because subways, buses, they're practically empty. All the major freeways, the traffic is really light. But the shelter-in-place order does let people go for a walk, hike, walk their dogs, as long as they keep 6 feet of distance between you and others. And I think that's been really the hardest thing for Bay Area folks to do, because you're supposed to stay close to home, but people are feeling pretty cooped up. So this
right.
past weekend, they did flock to beaches, parks. And so on Sunday, Marin actually closed its parks. Marin is home to Muir Woods, the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, and they did end up closing all their parks.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation because people do get cooped up. And just for mental health, it's nice to get outside. But at the same time, you don't want people gathering together in crowds. San Francisco's public health department is also going on a nurse hiring spree. In terms of personnel and equipment, how prepared are hospitals in the Bay Area?
Well, I would say, Jeremy, that they're actively preparing for a surge of patients. We aren't there yet, but they've been procuring hospitals. You know, we're waiting for a Navy ship from the feds here. We also have brought back a local hospital, Seton Medical in Daly City, that was set to close. That's going to be leased by the state for use now. But I think, you know, one of the hardest things is as we ramp up and try to get all these additional beds for a possible to try to deal with a possible shortage. I mean, it requires people to staff them, and those people need to have personal protective gear to care for people. And that's been really hard to get for frontline health workers. But what's been really heartening is that the community has really stepped up. You know, the Bay Area is home to a lot of wildfires, and so there are a lot of people with masks, face masks. Mm-hmm. So they are donating them in large numbers, which is great, but we also still need gloves, gowns, face shields here for staffers, and so we're still hoping that, you know, the promises from the state and feds that supplies are on their way will actually come through.
That is Mina Kim with member station KQED in San Francisco. Mina, thank you.
You're welcome, Jeremy.
This message comes from Here and Now sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. That's why you need Indeed.com. Post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates using an intuitive online dashboard. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free at Indeed.com/here now. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020.
We know many schools are closed because of the new coronavirus. We also know many kids depend on schools for meals, and some schools are stepping up to make sure kids have them. Bill Zeeble from member station KERA visited some closed schools in North Texas still open for meals for kids who show up.
It's lunchtime at High Point Elementary School in the Dallas suburb of Cedar Hill. More than 63% of the kids in this school district qualify for free or reduced-cost lunch. That percentage is even higher at High Point. Kitchen staff greet families driving up for today's hamburgers and milk, white or chocolate. Mom Marjan Moore welcomes the meals.
It's a really big deal. It alleviates a lot of stress on me having to get up, cook breakfast, lunch. I'm able to relax more with the kids. It takes a load off.
Moore is like many parents feeling that load now that her kids are home instead of in school. It's like spring break didn't end, but it was supposed to last week.
Normally in this situation, they have programs and stuff that they can go to. The rec will be open for them to go to, or just spring break functions that they can go to, as opposed to just being home all day, nothing to do. So that's why I chose to stay home for a week.
But some parents may not have that option to take time off. Others have been forced to with the close of restaurants and bars. That's why High Point Elementary's kitchen employee, Beverly Walker, is glad to have her job.
And so this came, you know, where we can come this week, you know, and get some hours. That was a blessing. So we just go from here.
Maisha Davis came here with her two kids, happy to find High Point at least still has food.
Especially with the shortage of food that's in the grocery stores, it's very important because you're not able to get all the essential things that you need to make meals because everyone has already taken it.
In nearby Fort Worth, 77% of the kids qualify for free or reduced price lunch. Dawn Washington's brought her twin 9-year-olds, Azarian and Amaria, to Eastern Hills High School. A food truck is serving up this menu.
It's a burger, an applesauce, and some carrots with some dipping sauce.
For now, these and other Texas school districts will keep serving up the meals, with sauce or not, even as the school doors stay closed. And to feed the mind, some districts plan to venture into online learning to teach kids stuck at home. that's not good enough for Myesha Davis back in Cedar Hill. She knows caution over the coronavirus has closed these campuses, but she doesn't like it.
I'm, like, really shocked about that because I'm like, what about the kids? Is, you know, what happened to No Child Left Behind? Even if it's online, but they still need that education from going to school, the social, emotional, the, you know, the interaction with other children.
School officials say that will happen again. They just don't know when. For Here and Now, I'm Bill Zeebel in Dallas.
Well, of course, food is top of mind for many of us as we settle into maybe weeks or longer of confinement in our homes. Grocery stores are still open, but Robin, as you know, in many cases, they are out of some items. Yes. And a lot of people might not want to go into a public setting like that for the moment anyway.
And a lot of people might be saying, what is that, that place with pots and pans? Oh, it's the kitchen. Here now, resident chef Kathy Gunst to the rescue. And Kathy, first of all, we have to ask, you've been traveling, so how have you been?
I'm just fine. I have self-quarantined. I am hunkering down at home, doing a lot of cooking, as you might expect, and thanks to friends and neighbors going grocery shopping for me and some local farmers that are actually pulled together and are delivering to the door, we're holding up really well.
Good. Yeah.
So what suggestions, Kathy, do you have for our listeners as they, as Robin said, get to know their kitchen for the first time in a while?
Well, this is certainly a very important and opportune time to reacquaint or acquaint yourself for the first time with your kitchen. Many people have spent years living on takeout and frozen foods, and that is no longer nearly as possible as it once was. Going shopping is the first challenge. Most people make a list, and that's the most economical way to shop, but it no longer applies because many of the things that we're looking for are no longer available. Grocery shelves are out of staples like beans and pasta and rice and toilet paper, of course. So walking into a grocery store with a list might not work, and trying to follow traditional recipes does not serve you that well anymore either, because you can only find half those ingredients. So you want to go to the grocery store with an open mind. What looks fresh? What could you buy that would make several meals out of one ingredient? I'm not encouraging people to hoard. That is a bad idea. But you want to shop sensibly and think about, okay, what am I going to eat for the next week or the next 10 days so that I don't have to come back to this store and leave my home and risk my health?
Well, you know what? We've done segments before. I'm thinking, Jeremy, we should link to them, actually, because we've talked to you about what should you have in your pantry, you know, for a quick dish, you know, and we've talked to you about frozen foods, which are, you know, a lot of people turn up their nose at frozen or canned, but a lot of them are, have a lot of nutrients. And I found myself buying these vacuum packed packages of slabs of like haddock steaks, right? You know,
I found the frozen section pretty empty, though, when I went to the supermarket the other day. For some reason, people are stocking up on that.
They listen to Kathy.
Yeah. Well, they are. But I mean, you know, you have to go with the flow as you enter the grocery store. So let's say you open your pantry and there's a can of beans, white beans, black beans, kidney beans. Normally, that might not be your most exciting choice, but this happened to me the other day, and there was a can of white beans. I had some sun-dried tomatoes. I had an onion and a garlic clove, and I sauteed up that onion and garlic, and then I drained the white beans under cold running water, threw those in with some of these sun-dried tomatoes. Fresh tomatoes would work. Canned tomatoes would work. Roasted red peppers would work. Added some rosemary and a splash of white wine. And we had a really terrific midday meal of these white beans, really simple. I've written out these recipes for the website in a fairly untraditional way, saying, if you don't have this, use that. You can still make it if you don't have three of these ingredients. Because if ever there were a time to understand how the kitchen works and how to adapt recipes, this is it.
Kathy, if I open up the cabinet and see a can of tuna that's been in there for a while, what can I do with that?
Well, you could do a lot of things. You could make a fish cake for sure. But I had that exact experience as well the other day. And I made what I'm very loosely calling a tuna niçoise. I had 2 cups of greens. I had some, you know, supermarket lettuce greens, put them on a plate, Poach 2 eggs, 3 minutes. Just drop the egg in for 3 quick minutes. Scatter the canned tuna with a little bit of the oil around. Put the poached eggs on top. Sprinkled it with a few olives I found or nuts. Maybe you have a radish. Whatever you have on hand, a super quick pantry fresh salad. The same is true for, we have links up for what to do with rice, what to do with eggs, what to do with grains and pasta, stocks and soups. This is a great time for soup because soup lasts for several days. I'm also encouraging people to make large portions of food. And if there's an elderly person in your community, in your apartment building, drop the food off. Let them know via phone. You don't have to have any physical contact. Just leave a care package. Cook more and help out neighbors, because building community at a time when we're being asked not to leave our homes is really difficult, but we have to keep thinking about people who can't get out and people that may not have the same food resources we have. I also have had a virtual dinner party with several friends, getting on Zoom or Facebook or on our phones, where we all sit down and eat a meal together and talk. And it's not the same thing as being at the same table, but it has certainly helped this week go by a little bit quicker.
Well, actually, I'm looking at
you can't ask somebody to pass the pepper, right?
Right. I'm looking at Jeremy.
No, but some people are cooked. Go ahead.
I was saying, I'm looking at Jeremy on an iPad. You know, it works
there
out
you
well.
Go.
You can do a radio show. You
can
do a dinner
share
party.
A cup of tea. Yes.
I need to ask you, Kathy, because we tweeted back and forth about what I'm about to ask you about. I was trying to make immune boosting dishes. You mentioned those beans. I've become a fan of getting a few cans of like light coconut milk, and then you just put that in with really, you know, ginger and turmeric and onions, and you get that great, you know, your face sweats. Now you're not a doctor. But I thought that
would
be, well, I know, shocking. But what about the, you know, food that's immune boosting?
Well, there's an awful lot online these days, and the lists tend to agree with each other. You mentioned a few: garlic and ginger, favorite flavors of mine, good immune boosting foods, spinach, yogurt, turmeric, the spice that's used in a lot of curries, adds a beautiful flavor to food, very good for your immune system, green tea, sunflower seeds, citrus, papaya, and broccoli, which actually I've heard there's quite a bit of in the supermarket. So you want to stay as healthy as possible. This is a great time to invite your kids into the kitchen and to really just start to learn some new dishes, some new foods, and experiment. This is, you're going to be okay, and food will help you, but you really need to just keep it loose and use what you've got.
Yeah. We're going to put all these recipes at hereandnow.org. And Kathy, one of the things that this has made us all realize is how much we miss restaurants. You're right, community. You know, we don't have that ability right now. And it's those people who work at the restaurants are certainly suffering a lot through this. But it also is harmful for everybody.
Terrible. Yeah, it's really difficult. That was a big part of our social life. You got to buy gift certificates to your favorite local restaurants so that they exist when we get through this.
Kathy Gunst, we got to go pretty soon. But you're right. Buy those gift certificates. Invest in them now. Visit them on the other side of all of this. Kathy Gunst, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Miss you all.
Need to escape the news for a moment?
Check out Endless Thread, a podcast from WBUR and Reddit.
From mysteries to histories to stories that will remind you of our shared humanity.
Subscribe to Endless Thread on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says COVID-19 is under control in Russia, but the mayor of Moscow today ordered everyone over the age of 65 to stay home. Russia has a population of 145 million people, but so far has reported only about 500 COVID-19 infections. Joining us now is the BBC's Steve Rosenberg in Moscow. Steve, what steps has Putin taken to deal with COVID-19? He says it's under control.
Yeah, that's right. That's the main message coming out of the Kremlin and from the Russian government. A number of measures have been taken. Yesterday, most flights were stopped in and out of Russia. There are some exceptions from Moscow to major capitals of the world. But the borders have been, to a certain extent sealed. And today, the Russian Prime Minister held a session of the cabinet and called on everything to be prepared if coronavirus hits big in Russia. Interestingly, the figures in Russia have been lower than elsewhere, the official figures, but that may not be a reflection of the real situation here. There is some suggestion that it's the tests for coronavirus being used in Russia are not sensitive enough to pick up all cases. But the Russians today announced that they are changing the way they are testing. So we could see quite a sharp rise in cases in the next few days.
Well, and I was seeing a Reuters report from a few days ago that said that the number of pneumonia cases in Moscow has been spiking recently. Do people believe Putin when he says the situation is under control?
There are people who don't believe that. You know, over the years, many people have come to lose trust in the authorities. A lot of people don't believe the official word. Having said that, that's all we have to go on at the moment. There are rumours, there is speculation that, yes, there are more pneumonia cases. We simply can't say that for sure. But certainly the message coming out from the Kremlin is everything is under control, but this is a virus which is affecting the whole world, and Russia must be prepared if it hits big here too.
Steve, one more thing. What is life like for you right now and for other people just in Moscow? Do you notice that, you know, things are shut down in the way that we do right now in the United States?
You certainly do notice. You go outside and there are far fewer people on the streets, fewer cars. As you mentioned, today the Moscow mayor ordered all Russians over 65 to stay indoors until April. So gradually the city is closing down. All gyms, swimming pools were closed a couple of days ago. The shops are still working. There was a degree of panic buying a few days ago, people buying lots of pasta, rice, buckwheat, which is what Russians always buy if they think there's a crisis coming. But that seems to have calmed down. Very difficult to buy paracetamol. It's very difficult to find paracetamol in the shops here, or masks or hand sanitizer. But I think there is a sense that this is the calm before the storm. People are bracing themselves for something really nasty coming down the line.
That is the BBC's Steve Rosenberg in Moscow. Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
And by the way, paracetamol, we know that as Tylenol.
Okay, listen up if you've lost your job because of the new coronavirus crisis. As thousands of people did, judging by the new filings for unemployment last week, and economists say millions of jobs could ultimately be at risk. Other workers have been called essential and required to work through the crisis, but now if they get sick, they might not be tempted to work because of expanded paid sick leave laws that President Trump signed into law last week. So what do those protections mean and who's left out? Mariah Passarelli joins us now. She's an employment lawyer in Pittsburgh with Cozen O'Connor. Hi, Mariah.
Hi.
And start with people working, the bill President Trump signed into law, the second of what is supposed to be several coronavirus relief bills, expanding paid sick leave. What does it entail? Who's eligible?
Sure. So the president passed something called the Coronavirus Emergency Families First Coronavirus Response Act, and there are really two parts. The first part is an expansion to the Family Medical Leave Act. The second is emergency paid sick leave, which is its own new law. So first, I'll tell you about that expansion to the Family Medical Leave Act, which is abbreviated FMLA. So the FMLA has for a long time provided employees with benefits provided unpaid time off from work. But this new emergency expansion to the FMLA provides employees with, in part, paid time off and really dramatically relaxes some of the old FMLA's requirements in terms of how long a person had to work for their company in order to qualify. So if you're an employee, to qualify for this new emergency expansion to the FMLA, you only have to have worked for your company for the last 30 calendar days. That's way shorter than the 12 months that you would have to have worked for your company under the old FMLA.
Yeah.
And under the traditional Family Medical Leave Act, your period of time off would have been unpaid. But under the new emergency expansion, the first 10 days are unpaid. But after that, the employer has to pay you 2/3 of your salary. But there are caps. So there's a daily cap per employee of $200 a day. And there's a $10,000 total cap. That new expansion to the FMLA applies to all companies that have 500 or less employees. There's language in the law that would allow the Department of Labor to excuse essentially small businesses that have 50 or less employees. But so far that, you know, any excuse from the Department of Labor for small businesses hasn't come. So if your company has 500 or less employees, it applies to you. The other exception that I think is really relevant right now is that employers that employ healthcare providers don't have to allow the healthcare providers to use this type of emergency FMLA. And the definition of healthcare provider is borrowed from the old FMLA. That includes lots of doctors, some types of nurses. And the emergency expanded FMLA is available in a way maybe a little bit opposite of what you think of when you think of traditional FMLA, which is used for folks' serious medical conditions. This emergency expansion is actually intended to allow people to be off from work when they can't come to work because of a child care situation.
Well, so I wanted to ask about that. Hold on a second, because I wanted to ask, do you have to prove that you're sick to take this expanded paid sick leave? And you're saying, no, it's about taking leave to maybe adhere to quarantine requirements. Do you have to stay home and take care of kids?
That's right. So the other act that I'll talk about in a second, that paid sick leave act, is for when you're sick. But this emergency FMLA expansion is only available for folks whose child care is interrupted or whose minor children have a school that's closed. Those are the two circumstances under which they could take that emergency FMLA expansion leave.
Keep going. Yep.
So if you yourself are sick or you're subject to quarantine or you have to care for somebody who is under a quarantine or isolation order, you'd actually be covered by the other half of that new legislation that the president signed, the emergency paid sick leave law.
Okay. So check those things out if you're working and you want to get this time off. But just briefly, we only got a minute. What about the people who have been furloughed or fired or laid off because their company had a fold? Just the best tip about filing for unemployment in the minute we have.
I would file as soon as possible. Unemployment compensation laws up until now have been largely decided at the state level, but there's new legislation. The one that's likely to be presented to the president next would bring federal level unemployment compensation laws. I think you'd also look to see some agreements coming between state and federal governments to reimburse states for high volumes of unemployment compensation claims. But the most important thing would be if you're furloughed or laid off and you're not working from home, meaning there is no work available for you, I would file for unemployment compensation benefits as quickly as possible. You can usually start that process by going to your state's website.
Yeah, and we hear that some of those state websites are crashing.
I am not surprised. They're certainly not meant to handle the volume I imagine they're handling now. But
And what can you possibly get, just briefly?
You get partial, unless the government, unless a new law is passed to expand this, under traditional unemployment compensation, you'd get a portion, and it's determined on a state-by-state basis, a portion of your normal wages for a defined period of time, usually a year. Yeah. But I think what the new law may do is make the payment higher or the duration longer or both.
Okay. Mariah Passarelli, employment lawyer with Cozen O'Connor in Pittsburgh. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Robin.
And let's turn now to a drug we've spoken of here. It's in high demand now that President Trump promoted its potential to treat COVID-19 before it's been investigated or approved for that use. As Martha Biebinger from member station WBUR reports, there are signs that people are hoarding the drug hydroxychloroquine for patients who already have prescriptions. They are having a hard time getting the medicine they need.
In tweets and during briefings with medical leaders last week, President Trump offered hydroxychloroquine, brand name Plaquenil, as a possible cure for COVID-19.
It may work and it may not work. And I agree with the doctor what he said. May work, may not work. I feel good about it. That's all it is, just a feeling. I'm a smart guy. I feel good about it. And we're going to see. You're going to see soon enough.
There are drug trials underway to determine if this medicine, approved for malaria, lupus, and rheumatoid arthritis, meets FDA standards to treat COVID-19. In the meantime, there's a run on the drug at pharmacies across the country, including in Massachusetts.
Our members are definitely seeing more demand for this medication and, you know, possibly some people trying to hoard the medication.
Todd Brown, who runs the Massachusetts Independent Pharmacists Association, says it appears some doctors are writing prescriptions for themselves or family members.
Pharmacists are seeing an increase in requests and prescriptions for them in instances where it's not clear why the patient needs it at this time.
Brown is suggesting pharmacists restrict prescription quantities and only fill prescriptions for patients with an active need for hydroxychloroquine. If doctors are hoarding, colleagues say that's unethical. Dr. Michael Barnett, a primary care physician and assistant professor at Harvard's Chan School of Public Health, says the drug, if it works, must be saved for those most in need.
There are frontline physicians where if this medication is actually effective or can be used to prevent coronavirus, they certainly could merit treatment with that. But we are very far from knowing whether it's effective in that manner.
You'll notice Barnett mentioned speculation that hydroxychloroquine might prevent the virus that causes COVID-19. While that's not proven, Barnett says he can see why a doctor or nurse might say, hey, I can't get the masks or goggles or gowns I need to protect myself. Why not try this medication? Barnett is sympathetic, but he points out this medicine can cause heart problems, so should not be taken unless there's a known benefit.
Having sort of a free-for-all in terms of prescribing for oneself and just deciding that I'm going to grab some while I can is the kind of mentality that can really undermine our efforts to actually have a concerted public health campaign against this disease.
And then there are the patients with lupus and rheumatoid arthritis who take hydroxychloroquine daily to reduce swelling and rashes. Dr. Jeff Sparks says his patients at Boston's Brigham and Women's Hospital were already fretting about having enough medicine on hand if stores close or it's hard to get out.
The entire last week seemed to be filled with a lot of anxiety about what to do about medications, and in particular, patients asking for refills for hydroxychloroquine.
And now some patients are being told they can't get the medicine or can only get a limited supply. Sparks worries because he says the medication is what keeps many of his patients stable.
So even if patients are doing well, stopping the medication could cause them to flare, which means that they then need to go on to other immunosuppressants or come to the clinic or even get admitted and potentially get exposed in the clinical setting.
Sparks says like ventilators and masks, hydroxychloroquine is a medical resource the country needs to learn how to manage more carefully. For Here and Now, I'm Martha Biebinger.
With a lot of us home right now because of social distancing efforts, here's something that might help take your mind off of COVID-19. Some spring gardening. Joining us now is Deborah Kanapke, who's a garden consultant in Columbus, Ohio, through her business, The Garden Sage. She's also a writer and teacher. Deborah, good to talk to you.
Same here. It's nice to talk to somebody.
It's nice to talk to somebody, and it's nice to talk about something that you can, you know, do in a positive way while you're stuck at home. What kind of conversations are you having about gardening right now, or what would you suggest that people do at this moment if they want to at least get outside into their own garden?
Probably a lot of the same things that I'm doing. Although we've had a lot of rain, so I can't step in the gardens that much, but I have been edging my gardens. I've been weeding. I also have been starting seeds, and hopefully people already have seeds. If not, that's something you can order on the web. And that means that I will have tomatoes and chilies for later.
And now is a good time in a lot of the country to be planting those seeds?
Yes, especially, you know, our bigger plants, eggplants, tomatoes, chilies, flowers that you want. This is a good time, at least in the Midwest. We are planting out into the garden with our perennials and annuals in the beginning of May. So now's the time to get those seeds started for your herbs, flowers, vegetables, etc.
Now, you also mentioned weeding. What would you suggest people do there?
Well, I'm weeding from the edge of my beds, but with all the rain we've had in the mild winter, the weeds are just ecstatic. The winter bittercress is out. Dandelions are up. They're okay to be in my lawn, but not in my garden beds. I'm leaning over and I'm doing my early spring stretches to get those weeds out of there.
What other tasks can people get started on in the garden now that it's spring?
Well, there's also thinking about what you want to do. There's a lot of resources on the web. There are books. I've been perusing through my books, thinking about what changes I want to do this spring. Also thinking about what kind of container combinations you want. Because once we can go out and go to the garden centers, you better believe there's going to be a rush on annuals and tender perennials to put into containers and into our beds. Because right now we all want nature.
Is there something kind of calming or relaxing to you about just getting out into the garden at this moment? It's something that happens every year. It feels normal and it's, you know, it takes your mind off of everything that's going on.
To me, the garden is my mental health, and any time I can get into it is wonderful. This time of year, especially as things are waking up, I have about 15 plants, different species in bloom right now. So I go visit those plants before I do some work in the garden. So getting out into the garden will lift your spirits along with just being outside and breathing in.
Mm-hmm. Now, gardening is about following a schedule throughout the year. There is, of course, a lot of uncertainty now. We don't know when this is going to be over. It will be over at some point, but we don't know when. What would you say to people in terms of what kind of mindset they should have as they manage their gardens?
In gardening, there are never any guarantees. So I think that if you're a gardener or a beginning gardener, you learn really fast that you just have to balance and adjust, move with the flow of nature. And this is probably one of the best lessons we can have right now with coronavirus and physical and social distancing, is just getting out and evening yourself out into the garden and into a forest. If there's a woods by you, do that forest bathing that everyone's talking about. And if you don't know what that is, get on the web. There's a lot of information.
What is the one thing that you can't wait to plant this year?
My tomatoes. That's the best. And in fact, if I didn't have tomatoes in the garden, my husband might divorce me because that's one of his favorites.
Well, Deborah Kanapke, garden consultant in Columbus, Ohio. Great to talk to you as always. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeremy. And stay healthy.
You too. You too.
Thank you. Bye.
So some spring gardening tips to bring some joy. Robin, it's so nice to bring some joy, even in the midst of
and
this.
And she mentioned forest bathing. This is a Japanese practice, Shinrin Yoku. I happen to know about it. Look it up. Go forest bathe.
Forest bathing. I'd be worried about ticks. But anyway, here's something else just to close out this hour that made me laugh over the weekend. Actress Rita Wilson, who, as you know, was diagnosed with coronavirus along with her husband, Tom Hanks, posted a video on Instagram to show off her rap skills, trying to pass the time while in quarantine. Listen to this.
You drew a picture of my morning, but you couldn't make my day. I'm rocking and you're yawning, but you never look my way. I'm looking down you, darling, in every single way. Your funny flow is on and your green comes on the way. This ain't got to do with shampoo, so watch your head and shoulder. Brother older, bold enough to fold you. Yo, I told you, I ain't afraid of what I made and played it with some funky twists of savior flips and tricks.
We only had to bleep one thing there, Robin, but she did add the caption, quarantine stir crazy, see it to believe it. By the way, the good news is both Wilson and Hanks are apparently feeling better.
Apparently, listen to her. Quarantunes.
Quarantunes. Here Now is a production of NPR and WBUR in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. This is Hey Ho. Here and now.